Log Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com for Sunday, July 22nd, 2018. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, coming to you with the post-Slammiversary edition of Wrestling Night in America. I'll be joined by Impact contributor to PWTorch.com, Mike Mann, momentarily. Just a quick summarization of the Slammiversary pay-per-view, which has gotten rave reviews online from those following the show on Twitter, and deservedly so. This was an easy thumbs-up show, one of the best Impact Wrestling pay-per-views in a long time. An unbelievable effort that sort of came out of nowhere. You know, this was a card that looked good on paper, but it blew me away as far as my expectations for the show, which you know, they weren't really high just because you've been burned by Impact Wrestling so many times before, but this show really did a nice job, and I'll talk with Mike McLean about this, of in a certain way giving fans the impression of what Impact Wrestling stands for and what differentiates it from the other companies. You know, the WWEs, the other indies that are growing out there and getting television and getting streaming services are all vying for the attention of the wrestling fan, and Impact presented something here that will be attractive to, I think, a certain percentage of that fan base. So, just a fantastic showing from Impact Wrestling tonight. Really, really looking forward to talking to Mike McMahon here about this show. Let's bring Mike in here. I believe this is Mike. Your Wrestling Night in America, sir, or ma'am.
Hey, Greg. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good.
I just wanted to make sure it was you there. Mike, you covered Slammiversary on PWTorch.com. You cover Impact Wrestling every week on PWTorch.com, the TV shows. On my own show here for Andrew Socek, who couldn't make it tonight, he and you were going to run Wrestling Night in America this week talking about Slammiversary, and I know you guys do a fantastic job with the post-Impact live cast every Thursday night on PWTorchLivecast.com. I had the pleasure of joining you a week and a half ago and talking a lot about where Impact was headed with the card leading into Slammiversary. And now you and I get a chance to talk about the just completed card here. And before we get into the minutia of the show, Mike, I just want to ask you your overall thoughts on the show, on Slammiversary, big picture thoughts on how the show went.
This was wild. I had decent expectations going into the show just because I thought the card was really good. But I mean, we've also seen some disappointing pay-per-views in the past. Like Redemption was okay in April. Bound for Glory last October was a train wreck. And granted, that was being run at a time where they had different people in charge of the company. But still, I mean, I had some decently high expectations for the show just because I thought the card was really good. And this is good. This type of show is going to appeal to a certain type of audience member. I think you're going to see some people that weren't going to that aren't going to like it at all, just because of how hardcore the show was. I mean, there were three, I'd characterize them as hardcore style matches. And I think some people are the people that don't like that style, that late 90s ECW style, are not going to like this type of show. But this was a wild show that was a lot more violent than I expected. Because, I mean, if you watch the show over the last several weeks, they did a pretty good job of building up these matches and making a lot of them feel real personal, but I didn't expect the level of violence that we saw in some of those matches tonight, particularly the Callahan-Pentagon match, which I thought just blew everything else away.
One of the things that I tweeted at Greg M. Parks, the show, I was tweeting my impressions, and one of the things that struck me during that Callahan-Pentagon match, and I said this on Twitter, whether you like Impact Wrestling showing exactly what they want to be as a company with what they're offering on this show. The previous pay-per-view was run under the auspices of the same people running this one, but now they are deeper into their run, and I'm talking, you know, the Don Callahan-DeMore duo. So there, I think we're seeing a lot more of their fingerprints. I think we're seeing a lot more of what they want Impact Wrestling to be. And so to my tweet, Mike, did we learn about what Impact Wrestling wants itself to be, what Don Callis and Scott D'Amore want Impact Wrestling to be based on what we saw on this show?
I would think so. I mean, it's, you're right. And it's one of the things that, you know, I've been yelling about for over a year now, is that they need to do something to differentiate themselves. They can't feel like a light version of WWE. That's not going to get any new eyeballs on themselves. And I think you could look at whether it's New Japan or Ring of Honor and say, okay, well, they've got their style, you know, kind of picked out. They're a more sport-like feel. So if you try to do something that's a version of what they're doing, it's not going to feel like you're doing it as good. So it's going to feel like you're ripping off what they're trying to do. They've kind of dipped their toe into the Lucha Underground style of presentation. And even then, you know, Andrew said it last week, and Andrew's watched a lot more Lucha Underground than I have, but he said it on Thursday. He goes, you know, Lucha Underground does their style of storytelling much better than Impact does it. So they need to kind of carve out their own niche and do something to differentiate themselves. And this is the one thing that they could do. I mean, this was violence, the only word I can think to describe it, but this was a pretty violent show. Mm-hmm. And if that's the style that they're going with, you know, I think it would be hypocritical of me to sit here and be on them for a year of come up with something to differentiate yourselves. And then here they finally do it. And I go, well, this isn't what I like. I mean, there's elements of this show tonight that I liked a lot, and I thought the physicality was good. I think that this show is going to appeal to some people big time, and there's other people that are going to be turned off by this type of show altogether. But you know what? At the end of the day, they need to do something to try and generate some buzz. And I think tomorrow we're going to find that this show generated a lot of buzz for them. I think people are going to be talking about this.
515-605-9345 is the number to call if you'd like to talk about Slammiversary with me and Mike McMahon here on the live cast. Make sure you press 1 so that you'll appear in our queue, and so that we know that you're not just listening to the show, but you also have a question or comment. The setup, the camera work, the arena, I thought the fans were fantastic throughout the entire show. They really added to the show and made it that much better. There's been some criticism of the lighting, how the show was shot. Can you speak on that, your impressions of what you saw in that regard?
Yeah, I thought the crowd was great. I mean, I know, Greg, you and I talked about it a couple of weeks ago on the Thursday live cast. Like, it's so much different, and it elevates the presentation of the show so much when they're in front of a crowd that's actually reacting to what they're doing. So I thought the crowd was really good. The presentation, the building itself, I thought was okay. The lighting was a little weird. I found that I got used to it, though, I thought, over the course of the show. I didn't like the elevated hard camera, and it I could be wrong, but I feel like they used that shot in particular less later on in the show. I noticed it more
like
at the beginning of the show. Yeah, and they tend to be going to it less and less later on in the show. So, and they also had a hard camera that seemed like it was set up at a lower angle as well, which they were using more of. I don't know why they didn't just use that from the very beginning. But that I didn't like. But other than that, I thought the building looked good. You know, it didn't look like a big arena, but it also didn't look like they were shooting in a stripped down television studio either. I thought that they did a pretty good job of making the building look good. I mean, I've never been to that complex, but it being a concert venue, I think, is what it mostly serves as. It seems like there's some permanent lighting and stuff like that in there that they took advantage of. The shots of, like, when a guy would climb the turnbuckle and they would shoot it from the ground looking up. The shot of the ceiling and some of the lighting that they had rigged from the ceiling, I thought looked pretty good. It just looked different. So overall, I thought the presentation was okay. The only thing I didn't really like was that elevated hard camera, and they seemed to go away from that as the show went on.
And that'll happen when you're and trying to find your voice, I guess, is for the lack of a better term. And here we are 16 years into Impact's existence, and we're talking about the company trying to find its voice. But, you know, we've talked about, and you talked about in the open, Mike, about Impact trying to differentiate itself from WWE, from the other competition out there, of which there is more now than there was when Impact started in 2002. And sometimes it's camera angle, sometimes it's lighting, sometimes it's how you set up the arena. So I don't come down too hard on them for that, just because they were kind of in experimentation mode there, and they seemed to learn from some of their mistakes that they made early on in the show, and they were able to adjust on the fly, which I thought was important. One more thing before we take our first break of the show. One of the bigger pieces of news coming out of Slammiversary is that Bound for Glory will be taking place in New York City on October 14th of this year, and it'll be taking place in the Melrose Ballroom in New York City. So, Mike, what do you make of that announcement?
Yeah, you know, New York's a pretty expensive place to run. It's outside of Canada, too. I mean, I kind of thought, honestly, if we were going to see them stay out of Orlando, which I'm totally fine with, I figured it would have been more Toronto, Ottawa, maybe they'd go to Montreal, you know, these Canadian markets where that's where Anthem is based out of. I assume that Anthem Sports also has a New York office. I mean, most big media companies do, but I could be wrong. I thought I read, and I believe this is true, is that also the same building that MLW just ran, I think, this past weekend?
I know they were in New York City. I'm not sure what location they ran.
Yeah, I think somebody – I thought I saw somebody on Twitter say that they were in the same building this past weekend. So maybe this is a venue, the Melrose Ballroom. I don't know exactly where it was, but I looked it up just to see what part of New York it's in. It's in Queens. Maybe it's a situation where, you know, this is a newer venue or a venue that's just trying to gain some traction, and they're trying to attract, you know, wrestling shows and recognizing wrestling as something they can bring an audience to their building. And maybe they cut Impact a deal, because I know the big thing when they had taped Impact, I think they were still on Destination America at this point, but they had a series of television tapings at Hammerstein Ballroom, not in Hammerstein, in whichever room that they used to use for Raw. I think it's attached to Hammerstein. I'm drawing a blank on the name. But they had run some tapings there, and I remember reading at the time the Manhattan Center, there it is.
Yeah.
But the issue at the time was it was just expensive. It was expensive to run. It's an expensive town to run, and it's expensive for talent to find hotels, and it was just everything was more expensive. So it's definitely interesting that they're going to New York. I think it's one of those spots, though, where there's so many wrestling fans in that area, whether it's New York or people can come up from Philadelphia or can come down from Boston. I mean, there's enough fans in that area that I think they're going to get a good crowd. I would imagine they're going to get a pretty good crowd, similar to what they had to do tonight in terms of reaction and things like that.
After this break, we will take your phone calls and run down Slammiversary match by match. Mike McMahon and Greg with you for the next hour plus or so here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at PWBoom.com. Once again, that's PWBoom.com.
You know, it is summertime here in Florida, and nothing feels better than getting rid of my beard that grows during the summer, getting rid of my facial hair that grows during the summer, and there's only one product that I trust to do that fully, and that is Harry's Razors. Harry's stands behind the quality of their blades, but they know that switching razors isn't an easy decision. So they created a trial offer. You can claim yours by going to harrys.com. You can get a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. That includes a weighted ergonomic handle, a five-blade razor with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Listeners of Wrestling Night in America can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/PWTorch. Make sure you go to harrys.com/PWTorch to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to support the show. Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com, Greg Parks, Mike McMahon, taking you through Impact Wrestling Slammiversary, which just went off the air about 15 minutes ago. And we're taking your phone call. So 515-605-9345 is the number to call if you want to talk about Slammiversary, if you have questions for me and Mike. And we're going to go to our first phone call right now. It's from the 615 area code. 615, please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg and Mike. This is Kenny from Tennessee.
Kenny, good to talk to you tonight. Did you get a chance to watch Slammiversary? And if so, what'd you think?
Yes, I did, and I want to thank you guys for helping me. I was on the fence, but, you know, you guys kind of changed my opinion. Dad and Wade and Bruce and Jason Powell, you all kind of got me convinced in it. And I must say, I have to give the show a thumbs up. I definitely think that from a booking standpoint, it was way better than what we saw last week with Extreme Rules as far as some of the outcomes of the matches. I thought some of the finishes were pretty clunky at best, you know, particularly the main event as well. But I'll get to that in a little bit. I want to talk about really three matches, which the main event is one of them. But I want to first talk about the Allie and Tessa Blanchard match. And, you know, to me, it's kind of the interesting psychology. You know, here you have, like, the local hometown hero. And in pro wrestling, what do you do with the local hometown hero? As Ms. McMahon has liked to say, book 'em to lose, pal. And I guess it just kind of is interesting in that sense. But there was one, it just felt more like a WWE women's match as far as the way it started and finished, including that spot where they all waited to get to 10. And it seemed like it was just so predictable, like when Tessa and Allie's like getting ready to go, it's like count to 10 and so forth. But I mean, to me, that match was, it was okay, but I just thought it was just it was just like an average match. I that's kind of my take on that match. And I expected Tessa to go over, but it was like that spot where in the promo before that where it says diamonds are forever. It's like, I don't know if she thinks she's either Ric Flair, Magnum TA, or Tully Blanchard. I want to get your observations, though, on Tessa Blanchard and where you think she's probably going to be at. You know, they say she's the future of Impact Wrestling as far as the Knockouts division. I'm not completely sold on that. Do you think that she is like the top star in the division at this
point? Well, first I'll say that I thought this was a really good match. I had this a lot higher rated than you did, Kenny. I thought this was Allie's best match in Impact. And I thought this rivaled and probably surpassed a lot of the WWE women's matches we've seen on TV lately. I think for the most part, the Knockouts in Impact Wrestling have come up short when it comes to their WWE counterparts over the last year plus. At one time, the Knockouts and then TNA were the strength of the company, and they could wrestle circles around WWE's divas. WWE has caught up and passed them since then, but I thought this match was really good and probably better than a lot of WWE main roster women's matches. But your point about Tessa, you know, as a heel, I think she's the number one heel on Impact, for whatever that's worth. They, you know, I wasn't surprised she won here. I thought she needed to win here because she's lost on TV to this point than I expected her to since she debuted. But she's just such a good heel. She's just so easy to dislike. I think she's got that down. She showed that she can wrestle. So I think, you know, the sky's the limit for Tessa in Impact as a heel. I don't see her as someone who, you know, 6 months, a year down the line can turn and be a top babyface. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe she's got that in her, but I see her as a heel through and through. Mike, your thoughts on the match first, and then Tessa Blanchard and what she can mean to Impact Wrestling.
Yeah, I like this match too. I thought this match was better than the Knockouts title match later in the show. I thought it was the Ali Tessa Blanchard match was the best of the two Knockout matches that they had on the show. And then Tessa, yeah, I agree with you. I think she's a really good heel. I think she presents herself differently than any other Knockout they have right now too, because Ali, I thought they did a decent job tonight, even in defeat, of kind of making Ali feel a little more serious than she has in the past. She was the gullible baby face that, you know, people kind of felt sorry for. That is beginning to wear off. So I think they're making attempts to make her feel more serious. And this match went a long way because she hung with Tessa, even though she lost the match. Tessa is just the big, strong heel that's going to be hard for, I think, a lot of people in that division to deal with if they tell the story the right way. Because, you know, Madison Rayne, I don't think she's just so much smaller than Tessa Blanchard. I mean, there's a obvious contrast there. And then you look at the rest of the division, and you've got, in terms of near the top, you've got Su Yung and Rosemary, who are just so different than Tessa Blanchard. Like, there's nobody really that's like Tessa Blanchard on the roster right now. And that would be the same, you know, if you were to put her in WWE in their women's division, it would really be the same. You know, I'm not sure anyone, even on the WWE roster, is as strong as Tessa Blanchard is. And then she can wrestle too, and she's young. I mean, I think she's 22. So she's someone that, I agree with you, Greg, I think she's just so good as a heel. And the type of character that she's portraying, I don't think it would work if you were to suddenly turn her babyface. So my hope is that they keep her a heel for the long term. Andrew and I were just talking on Thursday. The word is she signed a 2-year contract with Impact, and not many talents were signing 2-year contracts. A lot of these contracts that have been signed recently have been 1-year deals or a series of 1-year deals. So I think a 2-year deal from her is a good sign that they want to keep her around and build something around her. And then I completely agree with you, Greg. She needed a win here. They've had her lose on TV far more than they should have between when she debuted, I think, in April and now. So. She may have debuted actually at Bound for Glory. I was thinking it was Redemption, but I think it may have been Bound for Glory. But whatever the case may be, she's lost too much on TV. So she needed to win the match tonight, and I'm glad she did.
Kenny, follow up to what Mike and I talked about, or one of the other matches you'd like to address?
Yeah, a quick follow up as far as, I do agree with you. I'm glad to see that they are taking Ali seriously. And I will say that this was probably her best match so far in Impact Wrestling, for sure, in that form. But I just kind of felt like it just fell a little bit below expectations, but it was definitely the best of the Knockouts match, for sure. I do, speaking of putting people over, I guess, or in some cases, let's talk a little bit about the Eddie Edwards and Tommy Dreamer match. You know, it's just, you know, it's funny about how, you know, we think about things like ECW. You know, it's been almost 20 years since the promotion, the original one, closed. And it just seems like there's always, it's like the rock star, you know, it's like the old rock band that just keeps coming back for that one last show. And, you know, and it just, and I was glad to see Eddie Edwards win. They did the right thing in having Dreamer lose to Edwards. That was the right thing to do. But, you know, you could tell that Dreamer was definitely out of it at some point. You know, he's kind of breathing a little heavier and so forth. And it's just, and between that and just the push for being aggressive violence that, you know, we saw throughout the whole show, it just seemed like that there were some spots that just kind of threw me off. Like the one that really did was, you know, the table spot where they were trying to assume they were going to light a fire and a table match. And I thought, you know, a lot of these angles that they're doing, like with the staple gun and so forth, to me, that just ship has sailed so much, some of that old ECW stuff. And I thought that Impact was just way ahead of that. But obviously, you know, they still want to cater to that audience, you know, hear ECW chants and so forth. I guess Don Callis must have thought Toronto was a hotbed for ECW back in the day. But then again, he worked there, so I guess he probably felt that. But I thought the match was pretty much a decent match, not anything to sign off on other than, you know, Eddie Edwards getting the win and, you know, and essentially now being obviously, you know, a change in the character, I think, for the good, a more aggressive babyface, something that we really don't see much in pro wrestling. And I was wondering if you agree with that sentiment that Eddie Edwards is now a more aggressive babyface, and is that the right way for him to go?
I don't think he's necessarily a babyface. I thought he was the clear heel here against Tommy Dreamer. That's not to say that he can't eventually turn into a babyface, and they sort of talked about and referenced Eddie Edwards turning a corner here after this match, where Tommy Dreamer you know, gave him the weapon at the end of the match and kind of walked off into the sunset, and that appears to be over. Edwards and Sammy's program is obviously over. So maybe this is the moment where things click for Eddie Edwards and he goes back to normal as much as he can, which would be as much of a babyface turn as you can get out of this. But Mike, the violence aspect, not only of this match, but of some of the other matches on the show, I know you hit on it earlier. Is this passé? Are they hearkening to a time that is kind of past the wrestling industry and really society by? Are they making a mistake by trying to grasp at that previous era, do you think?
I don't know, honestly. I think time will tell. One of the things that I noted in my report on PWTorch.com tonight was, you know, in talking about how they're trying to differentiate themselves on a mainstream level, and even though they're not nearly at the peak of where they were when they were on Spike, I would still consider, you know, Impact as one of the, you know, probably one of the 4 to 5 mainstream promotions in the U.S., obviously with WWE, New Japan, Ring of Honor, Lucha Underground, the ones that have wide distribution. Of those mainstream companies, no one really does that on a regular basis. So if that's how they're going to differentiate themselves, maybe that's the niche they're going to try to carve out for themselves. I think time will tell whether or not it's going to work. I think that there, too, though, is a big difference between the type of hardcore violence you saw in the LAX match, for instance, as compared to the Tommy Dreamer Eddie Edwards match. Of the three matches tonight that I would kind of categorize as being the hardcore matches, Edwards and Dreamer, LAX and the OGs, and then Pentagon and Sami Callihan, of those three matches, the one that I enjoyed the least was probably Eddie Edwards and Tommy Dreamer. I think some of the stuff, you know, the stuff with the staple gun, that stuff, I think is a little passe. The crowd reacted to it, though, and that is what I think is going to drive or potentially drive Don Callis and Scott D'Amore to do more of it, is the type of crowd reaction that's going to get when you see that. Now, it's different, I think, for the viewer at home to the audience member in the crowd who thinks they're seeing this big thing, especially something like that tonight where they haven't used anything like that in a while, the whole staple gun thing. So I think if it gets or continues to get crowd reaction, they're going to continue to do it. But I think that there's a difference between a more athletic hardcore style like the LAX tag match was and the weaponry type, you know, slower paced, we're going to bash each other in the head with things like the Eddie Edwards, Tommy Dreamer match was. They're both be kind of categorized as hardcore matches, but I think within the within that definition, they're two very different styles of hardcore matches. And to me, the LAX, the tag team match with LAX and Homicide and Hernandez was the more enjoyable of those two matches if I were to compare the two. And then Pentagon and Sami Callihan kind of was a mixture of both. You had the spots where they were driving spikes into each other's forehead, and then you also had the spots where they're, you know, doing package pile drivers while standing on chairs and doing some pretty athletic moves as well. So you had the match with Dreamer and Edwards, which was almost solely based on weapons. You had the LAX Homicide Hernandez match, which was a little more athletic with weapons involved, and then you had Callihan and Pentagon that I thought was a mix of those two styles kind of together.
Kenny, hold on, because we're going to come back to you after this break, where Wrestling Night in America continues, breaking down Slammiversary here on PWTorchLivecast.com.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling this week with the state of wrestling. Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now. Get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at Stitcher.com/NotSam.
Back here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorch.com, talking Impact Wrestling Slammiversary. Here on July 22nd, 2018, I'm joined by PWTorch.com contributor and impact specialist Mike McMahon. We have Kenny from Tennessee on the line. Kenny, back to you for a response to what Mike and I talked about, and also your third match that you wanted to discuss with us tonight.
Yeah, in response to what Mike said, I totally agree with what he said as far as how. And maybe that was just by design of how it was booked. You know, you had, like you said, the one that was the pure athletic match, because I definitely thought that the LAX-OGC match was definitely a hard-hitting match. And I thought for sure up into the Sami Callihan Pentagon Jr. match that was the best match of the card. But then I think it's sort of a toss-up between those two. But I would say that my favorite was, as far as I'm to say it right now, the best match on the show was the Pentagon Jr. and Callahan match. You know, they followed up on the stipulation, except for one little thing, you know, and I listened to Bruce Pritchard's podcast, and when they shaved his head, you know, and he got rid of that sort of look that he's had, he kind of looks better. You know, it's kind of like, it defeats the purpose. You know, I mean, it's kind of like, he's going to look more cooler now than ever before, but. Okay, but that's the way it goes. But anyway, I thought that all three of those hardcore matches were definitely interesting to watch, and I just thought the Callahan at Pentagon Jr. match was the best of that. And I guess to round it up with, I guess we'll talk about the main event. You know, as far as I thought that they really missed the opportunity as far as with Curtis Granderson. You know, as far as, you know, he's just him basically holding the belt. You know, it looked like he was going to interfere and, you know, help Moose actually win the championship, because it did seem like for just a little bit, Moose actually was going to win the title. And this has sort of been always been my pet peeve with Impact and the World Championship going back to the end of the TNA days, and that if you become world champion, you're heel by default. And I always wish that there would be a time one day where Impact would actually dedicate and have a strong babyface champion. I mean, if anything, look at AJ Styles in the WWE Championship. I mean, he's proven that as a strong babyface champion, you know, regardless of who he's faced, he is definitely over in the eyes of fans, not just in WWE, but pro wrestling fans in general. And I guess my question is, do you think that will be the possibility that one day Impact will actually settle down and actually have a real, legitimate, strong babyface champion, as opposed to, oh, I won the title, boom, you're now a heel?
That's an interesting point that you bring up, Kenny, and I think it's a valid one. Impact has struggled to really find a long-term babyface centerpiece of the company. And if you've heard me talk about Moose before, you know that I don't think he's that guy. That being said, I am surprised he didn't win the title here. Everything seemed to be setting up him with the championship at the end of this show. I think there are some contenders on the roster. I think Johnny Impact is a possibility. I think Brian Cage is a guy. He's not a traditional babyface top guy, but I think he can play that role. But I think you want to have a babyface who represents the company, especially if you want to grow your company and go out into the mainstream and do press. I think you want to have a guy who represents Impact. It's not a one comparison, but like kind of like John Cena did for WWE. And I know that guys like John Cena don't come along every 5 years even. But if you're Impact, you haven't had a guy of that level for a long time. So are we putting too much stock into the idea that a top babyface champion or a top babyface guy is important in Impact?
No, well, I don't think so. Yeah, no, I don't. I think it's necessary, like you said. I think they need somebody that can kind of be that representative. And I would agree with you that I'm not sure Moose is that guy, but I'm also in agreement that I thought he was going to win the world title tonight. So I was a little surprised to see him come up short.
Well, I'm going to have to kind of break it. I didn't really think he was probably going to win the championship. But that said, I think he was definitely going to give a good go on it. But, I mean, the only reason I bring it up is, like you said, to grow the company, you know, to have, who is the face of Impact Wrestling. And that's been always the biggest thing, you know, is that the notion in traditional pro wrestling is that the heels do not sell, you know, like the merchandise and so forth. But, you know, Austin Aries could be that kind of cool heel, that contemporary Ric Flair aspect of his character. I definitely thought that he did a good job of, you know, selling the match and selling his opponent real well. I got to give Austin Aries a lot of credit for that, you know, since he's been the world champion. I don't think he's been a bad world champion. It's just, you know, he has to have strong opponents. And I don't see Moose as being really the face of the company either. You know, it could be, I'll just call him Johnny, you know, because he's gone through so many names. Be that guy if he's built right. But that's going to be the biggest challenge.
I'll take it one step further, Kenny. I think Aries could be that guy if he was booked as a babyface. And then the question becomes, how long is Aries going to be around? Because we've seen Impact cycle through guys. We've seen them not put a priority on signing guys to long-term contracts. So Aries is doing his thing. You know, he's been in MLW, he's been in ROH, he's been all over the place. He's not what you would call an Impact guy necessarily, because he is also identified with these other companies. So I think you got to get into a position where you can offer a guy a long-term deal where you know he's going to be around, and you can send him out to do press and to build around him knowing he's going to be there for the long term. I just don't know if Impact is in a position where they're able to do that right now.
Yeah, that is kind of true, although it is kind of shocking to see that they would sign Tessa Blanchard to a 2-year contract, and obviously Moose is exclusive to Impact. But, you know, obviously they're investing a lot of money into them because there is definitely bright futures on both of them. You know, it's just a matter of getting the pieces together. But overall, I definitely got to give the show a thumbs up. I'm glad to see Bound for Glory is going to be in New York City. You know, it's kind of like, hey, let's just join the rub against over New York City machine that ROH and New Japan has kind of got started. And that's good. And to me, I look at this. Pro wrestling, in my opinion, is definitely on the upswing. You know, I really feel like in the last couple of years, it's definitely been on the upswing because people are just consuming pro wrestling more than ever before. You know, like I watched tonight's Slammiversary through Fight TV, which I think is a great venue. You know, if you don't have the WWE Network or you choose not to and you want to watch, you know, the big ROH shows or Impact shows, that is where you got to go. The streaming I had was great up until the main event. It did kind of clink out a little bit, but it was the main event, so it was not a shock. But I think pro wrestling's on the upswing, and I do agree with you, Mike. Impact is definitely one of the mainstream promotions, even with its limited distribution on Pop TV, but they have the Global Wrestling Network, and I recommend, you know, Pluto TV. It's a free channel. It's available on Android and on Fire TV, and they have, you know, like a 24/7 Impact channel where they're showing replays of various Impact programs. So they're definitely out there. You just got to find it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think Mike may disagree with your characterization of the Fire TV app tonight. but, you know, that's obviously, you know, different strokes for different folks. You know, we've seen in the past with the WWE Network when it was starting up. You don't see this anymore, but when the network was first starting and, you know, the pay-per-views were going, you'd run into people on Twitter saying, you know, my network feed is crap. Is this the same for anybody else? And, you know, every once in a while you'd hear somebody chime in, but that's basically disappeared. Like, that, you don't see tweets like that anymore just because they've ironed out all the kinks and everything like that. WWE Network point of view. But yes, point taken, Kenny, that Impact Wrestling is certainly out there in a lot of different, they have a lot of tentacles out there, and it'll be interesting to track growth of this company going forward. Kenny, appreciate your phone. Good talking to you tonight. Thanks for calling in.
All right. Thank you very much. And hopefully, Mike, by the time the fall rolls around, Fight TV will be all in. Wink, wink. You have a good rest of the night.
Thanks, Kenny.
Yeah, and I got to say, I had some issues with Fight TV, but I've used it plenty of times. This is the first time I've ever really had issues. So I don't know what the deal was tonight, but my stream would kind of just kick out of me no matter what device I used. And I had an Apple TV that was hardwired to the router, and that even wasn't working, but my speed was like well into the 140s. So I was giving Fight TV a hard time on Twitter for having a stream that wasn't really working. But in their defense, in the 24 or so times I've used them, tonight was the only night I've ever had problems.
And it's funny you mention that, because I'm a dinosaur and I still order pay-per-view the old-fashioned way. And just as the main event was starting, my cable box decided to reboot itself. So I missed all of the main event except for the last 5 minutes or so. So when we're done here, I have to go back and watch the main event, because they're replaying it right now, actually, the Slammiversary show. So that's on my to-do list after we get done here. But 515-605-9345 is the number to call. The phone lines are open. If you want to talk about Slammiversary tonight, call in and press 1 on your dial pad so that you'll show up in the queue, and we'll put you on the air and take your thoughts on Slammiversary tonight. We are going to take a break right now. When we come back, Mike and I will go match by match through the show, give our thoughts on all that occurred here tonight on a very eventful Impact pay-per-view they call Slammiversary. Hold on. Wrestling Night in America continues after this.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
It would be a dereliction of duty if I did not take the time to mention that you can listen to Wrestling Night in America every Sunday night on PWTorchLivecast.com. I have a rotating list of co-hosts that join me each week. Mike McMahon is with me tonight. He's with me some other nights. But we are on a special time right now because we had and when there are WWE pay-per-views, we go on air right after that pay-per-view ends, and we devote most of the entire show to breaking down that view. On Sunday nights that there are no pay-per-views, such as next weekend, we go on the air at 8 p.m. Eastern. So about 90 minutes, we talk the big shows in professional wrestling, previews, reviews, looking ahead, looking back. And this Sunday night, July 29th, I will be welcoming Joel Donnell to the Wrestling Night in America broadcast for the first time. He covers Lucha Underground for PWTorch.com. So if you are a Lucha Underground fan, make sure you tune into that episode. We'll be spending a lot of time discussing the new season of Lucha Underground on the LRA network. Mike, back to the show. Slammiversary. Let's go through. We talked about big picture. We now talk about the match-by-match analysis here. The first match was Johnny Impact versus Petey Williams versus Taiji Ishimori versus Phoenix. Petey Williams, a late substitute for Rich Swann, who was injured, I believe it was in the MLW taping on Thursday night, got a concussion, could not see a suitable replacement for Rich Swann, Mike.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, I thought this was a good opener. I expected Johnny Impact to win the match in his return, and he did. But yeah, I thought Petey Williams was good. There was a couple of good spots in here where he tried to work in the Canadian Destroyer. I thought they told a pretty good story, even on commentary, when Darren Callis was talking about how he thought Petey Williams goes for that Canadian Destroyer too early in the match, and that was kind of a theme through the early part of the match. So overall, I thought this was a good opener. I thought I'm a big fan of Ishimori, so I was glad to see him back in the ring for Impact. He'd been away for a while. And then, you know, anytime you can see Phoenix in the ring, that's good too. So I like the opener. I thought it was a good way to start the show.
Yeah, I agree. I thought this is a really hot match, really good match. Probably the easiest match on the show to predict that it would be a really good match. So it's certainly not a surprise. I thought P. Williams was the right choice to replace Rich Swann, although I was disappointed that Swann couldn't compete because I was looking forward to see how he would interact in a match of this nature with these competitors in this match. I completely understand keeping him off the show, and I'm glad he didn't compete here with his injury. Petey Williams, being a hometown guy, having the show take place at the Rebel Complex in Toronto, Canada, bringing him in and knowing that you're going to get a hot crowd reaction, at least for him right off the bat, if nothing else. And they were hot for everything, not only in this match, but throughout the entire card. And he can still go. You know, this is a, you know, we'll bring in the hometown guy just for the hometown pop. I mean, he kept up with everybody and it was not a place at all. And he's been on Impact TV lately as well. Look into your crystal ball 6 months from now. Where's Johnny Impact in Impact Wrestling? Is he top of the card? Is he fighting for the X Division title? Is he in a tag team? I mean, what do you see? I mentioned earlier, talking to Kenny, that I see him as a possible top guy, babyface face of the company in Impact Wrestling. Do you see him that way? Do you think Impact sees him that way? Is he being pulled too many directions with Lucha Underground to be that guy? Where do you see him 6 months from now in the company?
I think they will use him as one of their top baby faces. I don't know if he'll be the top guy, because I feel like Cage is the one that they're trying to build to be that top guy. And I'm not sure that that's going to work. I think he's unique enough. I'm not sure that he is good enough on the mic to be the true top guy. But you could say the same thing for Johnny Impact. I mean, he can talk, but it doesn't sound necessarily, you know, natural, especially as a babyface. So I think they're going to continue to push him the way that they have, and that's as one of their top two or three baby faces. I'd like to see them try to push him as a top heel. I just think he's more natural as a heel. I hate to say that anybody is naturally unlikable. That's not what I mean. But
some people are naturally unlikable. It's not out of line to say it. I mean, that's just the reality of it.
I don't know that he's necessarily that way.
Okay, fair enough.
I think, though, that he, because he's done this in the past, I think he portrays the character of the cocky heel who's full of himself but can kind of go out and back it up. I think he plays that role really well. So I'd like to see them go as a have him go as a heel. And then, you know, his promo, which is not the strongest part of his game, it doesn't really matter if he's a heel, especially if he's the cocky heel. You know, somebody else, you could even get a manager that someone else could do is talking for him if you really needed to. So I'd like to see them use him as a heel, but, you know, I think that they're more than likely going to keep him where he is, and that's as one of their top three baby faces. I don't know where he kind of slots in that role, but definitely I think he's in that top three.
Match number two at Slammiversary tonight was Allie versus Tessa Blanchard. Tessa Blanchard getting the win in about 11 minutes with her DDT. We talked about this match a little earlier, Mike, and we both agreed that it was the better of the two knockout matches on the show here tonight. What made this a better match in your mind than the Knockouts title match between Sue Young and Madison Rayne?
I just thought it was more athletic, number one. You know, and I'll admit, part of this is probably based on my reaction. I'm just not really buying Madison Rayne as a challenger for the Knockouts title. They did their best of trying to make her seem like a serious threat to Sue Young. They talked about how she wrestled for Ring of Honor last night in Atlanta, and she is a former champion and all this stuff. But I think that was the biggest part of it for me, is I just never really viewed Madison Rayne as a real threat for that championship. And then the match, you know, I just thought this was a better match. I thought the match was more athletic. I thought that they did a better job in terms of the physicality. I thought that they elevated both Tessa Blanchard by giving her the win and Allie by making her seem like a credible threat to Tessa, and also made her come off as being more serious than she had in the past. So I thought that the quality of the match was better, but I also thought that this match accomplished more because I think it helped Allie and Tessa. Whereas, you know, the Knockout title match was just kind of, there, you know. I'm not sure there was anything really special about it. And some of the storytelling, I think, was a little off as well. We could talk about that when we get to it. But, yeah, I just thought that this match overall was the better of the two Knockouts matches for sure.
I referred to this as probably better than any even WWE women's match, main roster match in some time. Would you go that far with this match?
Yeah, I think it's up there. Yeah, for sure. I think it's up there because, you know, both Allie and Tessa kind of remind me of some of the top women you'll see on WWE's roster. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, would that match stand up against, you know, a Charlotte Sasha Banks match? Maybe not. From a match quality standpoint, I think it would. You know, from a crowd reaction standpoint, I just think that WWE's done a better job of building their characters, especially where Tessa's relatively new and Allie was not a serious threat as a wrestler up until recently, really. So I think from a reaction standpoint, anything that WWE were to present would probably be reacted to as being the better match. But if you looked at the matches in a vacuum and took the recognition factor of the competitors out of it, I guess, then yeah, I think that this match stands up against most of what WWE's done in their women's division over the last 6 months anyway.
The third match was a House of Hardcore match in which Eddie Edwards took on Tommy Dreamer. This had been brewing for some time. Edwards having transitioned away from the Sami Callihan feud and into this feud with Dreamer, who he accused of seeing Eddie's wife behind his back. Edwards picking up the victory here in about 12 minutes after the Dreamer symbolically and literally giving Eddie Edwards the kendo stick, turning his back and walking away. Edwards did not attack. Wife Alicia did end up coming out at the end and pleaded with Eddie for this to be the end of this feud, of this more or less this character of Eddie Edwards, I suppose, to some extent. This was the first of the three really hardcore matches on the show. Mike, it looks like Eddie and Tommy's deal is done, which makes sense. Tommy, at this point in his career, is going to be a short-term character anyway. Where do you see Eddie Edwards going from here? Does he see the light and turn babyface and go more back to his American Wolves persona? or does he continue on this crazed heel tear and find someone else to be in his crosshairs going forward?
Yeah, that's a good question. My read on it coming out of the match is that he's probably going to stay a heel. You know, I didn't really like the angle after the match, to be honest with you. I didn't like the fact that they built this up as being such a personal issue between Edwards and Dreamer, and then they beat the crap out of each other for 10 or 11 minutes or however long the match was, and they were running staple guns into each other's foreheads and everything else. And then after the match, you know, Eddie Edwards breaks down and Dreamer kind of symbolically says, "Hey, here's the Kendo stick. You know, you're the innovator of violence now," or whatever that message was. I just thought it didn't really fit with the type of story they told going into the match, and nothing in the match would have, would have looked at it and said, "Okay, well, that changed the course of the story between these two guys." I mean, Eddie Edwards won the match with a low blow. So I'm not sure why Tommy Dreamer – just I didn't like that angle, because Tommy Dreamer was sitting here going, "Okay, yeah, you beat me. Here's the kendo stick," symbolically, like, and literally, but symbolically, here's my kendo stick and I'm going to leave. Well, he beat you by kicking you with a low blow. I mean, it's not like – and granted, yeah, it was a hardcore match, but still, it's not like he was the better man necessarily. And then at the same time too, the crowd – and they had the staple gun spot, which we talked about as being, you know, real. They used a lot of weapons in this match. They teased using a flaming table. I mean, Tommy Dreamer sets up a table. He's pouring lighter fluid all over the table. The crowd's going nuts, and that's when Eddie Edwards comes in and kicks Dreamer with a low blow from behind and ends up getting the win after, I think, he had a Boston Knee Partner to get the pin. But, I mean, the crowd was excited for a flaming table spot, and it kind of got taken away because of the actions of Eddie Edwards. So even the finish
that was
of the
brilliant.
Came across,
I mean, what better way to get over the heel than not do what the fans want you to do?
Yeah, exactly. So I think Eddie Edwards stays a heel here, just because the end of the match certainly came across of him as him staying as a heel. That's why I almost thought where they were going, and they never did it, was Dreamer gives Edwards the kendo stick. They do the handshake. Dreamer goes to walk away, and then Edwards, you know, chases him up the ramp and kendo sticks him from behind or something. I was kind of waiting for something like that just to cement, he's clearly still a heel, because it sent some mixed messages, and that's why I didn't really like the post-match angle because of that. But I think the signs kind of point to them keeping Edwards as a heel. I just wish they were a little more definitive in where he stood when that segment was over.
Yeah, I liked the match a little better than you did. My read on it was Tommy Dreamer he's kind of been a father figure to Eddie Edwards throughout this whole deal. And, you know, this is a match that from bell to bell, Dreamer's going to give him what he's got. And he's going to fight within the confines of House of Hardcore rules, which means there's no rules. And Dreamer's going to do whatever he can do. And he understands that Eddie Edwards, even using a low blow, it's in the context of the rules for this match. And Dreamer is a hardcore guy at heart, so he knows that, and I don't think he's a guy to be offended by Eddie Edwards using a low blow to beat him or to set up win. So I think that the giver of the kendo stick after the match is kind of like Tommy Dreamer saying, "Okay, you got what you wanted, beat me up, you got your win, we're done here. Like, let's end it, and I'm going to give you this kendo stick, and I'm going to turn my back, and if you don't hit me, I'll basically know it's over and we can move on." So that was my take on it. But again, it really all depends on what Edwards is doing. If he's going to go back to being a babyface, I think the post-match was pretty effective. If he's going to stay a heel, then yeah, I would question it unless that fits into his next, what he does next as a heel, I guess I would say. I also like for simplicity. We're coming off a pay-per-view six days ago, Extreme Rules, where everything seemed to be complicated and convoluted beyond the necessary means. I didn't get that sense tonight. The booking was very straightforward. When there was a post-match angle or something, it fit the narrative, I thought, and it was kept simple. And I think that this post-match fit into that box that I was looking for, almost as a palate cleanser after last week's Extreme Rules.
Yeah, I mean, I will give you. I mean, I thought that the storytelling on the show overall was pretty straightforward, and I think part of that too is they did a better job. I think they did a better job than WWE did going into Extreme Rules of building the matches on the show. And part of that is the fact that this is their first pay-per-view since April, and they've had a pretty long time to kind of make these storylines feel like they're bubbling over and getting them to a boiling point. WWE is running these types of shows more frequently, and it's a little more difficult for them to do that. But, I just thought that I thought the build to the show was better. And then I think that allowed them to be a little more simpler in the way that they booked the matches on this show, because I just thought that the way that they led up to them on TV over the last month was better than what WWE was able to do in building Extreme Rules. And again, obviously there's reasons why the structures of their shows are much different, 2 hours instead of three, and less pay-per-views to have to build to. So there's reasons why that is, but I think that helped Impact in this regard.
We're going to take a break and come back with the second half of Slammiversary, blow-by-blow, match-by-match, here on Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchLivecast.com. Don't go away.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at PWPodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Greg Parks and Mike McMahon back here with the post-Slammiversary edition of Wrestling Night in America on pwtorchlivecast.com. 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Press 1 if you would like to talk to Mike and I about this Slammiversary pay-per-view, which is getting rave reviews from across the World Wide Web and the Twitter sphere and all the other important places where people go to talk about wrestling pay-per-views. We are going match by match through the show. Right now we are up to match number 4, Brian Cage versus Matt Sydal for the X Division Championship. Cage gets the victory to continue his force in Impact Wrestling. Mike, first of all, what did you think of the match?
Oddly enough, I would say I didn't like this match as much as I thought I was going to. Like you with the main event, I had some stream issues at this point, so I missed probably the first 4 or 5 minutes of it. But it just... I was hoping for this to feel like a bigger moment for Brian Cage, and maybe it will over the course of the television tapings. Maybe they'll make it feel like it was a bigger moment, but it kind of, to me, just felt like, okay, Cage won the match, and then they just went on to the next thing. It didn't kind of feel like the exclamation point that I was hoping it would for Cage. Hopefully Matt Sydal's okay too, because I'm not sure that he was supposed to catch his foot on the top rope the way he did after going for the shooting star press. That almost looked kind of scary. He could have come down pretty hard there. So maybe that's why, I mean, I'm just speculating here, but maybe that's why they got away from the ring as quickly as they did. I don't know if he needed help at the back or not, but it kind of felt a little rushed. They've done this in the past. I've been critical of this in the past too. I think it was Evolve for Glory when Gail Kim won the Knockouts title. She won the match. She raised the title, and then within seconds they were in the video package for the next match that was coming up in the show. It didn't kind of let it breathe and make it feel like it was a big moment for the person that just won the title, and I kind of felt like they fell into the same trap with Cage here.
Hey, with that shooting star press, you could see on the replay that Cage had put his up, so it looked like he was supposed to catch Sydal with his foot with Sydal coming down. Unfortunately, yeah. Sydal never made it down. And that could be one of the reasons why, you know, Sydal's done the move thousands of times and probably has never biffed it like he did tonight. And I think part of the reason he may have been doing that was he was trying to line up his face with Cage's foot. And so he probably felt he had to get closer to the turnbuckle on his rotation, and that's what led to his feet. Speculation on my part, but that's sort of what it looked like from home. Cage now the X Division champion. I think this was something that we had predicted coming out of this. because he had so much momentum in Impact Wrestling. The problem now is the X Division is not exactly ripe with challengers who could conceivably legitimately challenge Cage for the X Division title. I mean, he slots in to the X Division, and he's immediately head and shoulders above everybody else that's been pigeonholed as an X Division wrestler. So how do they keep Cage's momentum going with the division as thin as it is?
I have no idea. I almost wonder, you know, do they have to bring in some outside talent, even if it's just for one-off matches? Do they have to bring in some outside talent just to give him people to work with?
The Brian Cage X Division Open Challenge.
Yeah, literally something like that. I mean, even if it's just for one-offs, and they kind of did that. I mean, they kind of did something similar to that a couple of months ago, where Brian Cage was on his world tour, you know, and he wasn't fighting guys in the Impact Zone, but he was wrestling. He had a match in Japan one week, and then he was in Australia the next week. And it was all these tape matches from their partner promotions around the world. You could do something similar here, I would think. And every week there's someone else that he faces and defends the X Division title, and you could do that. You could probably do that for a couple of months, and I don't think it would get old, especially if you had the right mix.
Or he goes to these other companies and challenges wrestlers, and they. That TV.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the easier way to do it. It would cost them less, I would assume, because they're not flying people in. They're sending Brian Cage out into these matches where he's already booked and just taping it. But yeah, I think that would work. I think that would work well, actually, because it's a way to kind of mask the fact that, like you said, they just don't really have a lot of depth in that division right now.
Match number five was the Knockouts Championship match. It was Madison Rayne against Sue Young. Sue Young retains the title in 7 minutes. Madison Rayne put into a coffin, hauled away by the Undead Bridesmaids after the match. There were issues with both Rayne and Sue Young coming into this match as far as characters. Madison Rayne coming in as the veteran. A lot of people didn't buy her in this role. Then you have Sue Young, who a lot of people can take or leave her gimmick and the supernatural powers and the video packages that go along with it. Some people think that crosses the line from wrestling storytelling to kind of hokey and Lucha Underground-ish for the people who use that as a pejorative. Sue Young getting the victory. I know there is a lot of speculation that Madison Rayne will be in the second Mae Young Classic coming up. So that is something to read into this result and the way she was patched out of the arena. But we talked about this compared to the other match. What I will say, I like the finish. I liked the mandible claw and Sue Young rapping Madison Rayne up in that hold and beating her that way. What's your take on Sue Young? You know, we talked about Madison Rayne a little bit. What do you think about Sue Young and Sue Young as a Knockouts champion?
I know there's been people critical of that character. I don't mind it. I think that she does it really well, and I think there's some legs still there to her, whether it's her and Allie again or her and Rosemary, if they were to bring her back. I believe she's hurt, but there's other things they can do with that character, and I don't mind it much at all. I think the way that they present, you know, the video packages with her and the vignettes with her, how you say they mimics Lucha Underground to a certain extent, I think they can do that as long as it's, you know, with one rivalry at a time, one story at a time. And if it's Rosemary and Sue Young with those two types of characters, I think those are the characters you can do those type of video packages with. So I don't mind it really at all. I think that she's a good fit for the Knockouts title right now. Ultimately, I think that if they're going to go with two knockout feuds at a time, as they've been trying to do over the last couple of weeks, there was obviously two separate matches on this show tonight. I think that you probably want to get the title off of her and get it maybe, you know, perhaps on someone like Tessa Blanchard, although I don't think that Tessa Blanchard is going to necessarily beat Sue Young for the title. I think you could do, you know, once she's healthy again, a Rosemary Sue Young storyline without the title and put the title in a storyline with maybe Tessa Blanchard and Allie, or Tessa Blanchard and Kira Hogan, who they're trying to build up. I mean, there's other people you can go with, but yeah, I think that she fits a role. The one thing I've nitpicked on this for the last couple of weeks, but the one thing that really kind of struck me and I didn't like tonight was they've acknowledged on air numerous times that Josh Matthews and Madison Rayne are married. Josh Matthews has said it on commentary. So Madison Rayne in her pre-match promo backstage talked about her husband. She didn't name Josh Matthews by name, but talked about her husband, and Josh again has acknowledged that him and Madison are married on air. And he just didn't seem all that concerned as his wife was getting stuffed in a coffin.
It's wrestling.
That,
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Other than to say that Su Yung was sending a message. It's a continuity thing with me. It's a little thing that I know people aren't going to care and think it's a silly thing to get upset about. But little continuity things like that just drive me nuts as a viewer. It was the one thing that I just sat there and shook my head with. Like, it's fine if you don't acknowledge that they're married on your television, but the fact that you've said it before and then kind of just conveniently forget about it when it's convenient for you, are just little things like that that drive me crazy. But that's a small little nitpick. Overall, though, I thought that this match was just kind of there and certainly didn't live up to the other matches that were on the show.
I think it's important also to say it wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't an actively bad match, but when the quality of the show elsewhere is so high, it makes this one stand out a little more for being not as good as those other ones. So it wasn't this, you know, mess that didn't belong on pay-per-view. It just, in the context of the show as a whole, it didn't match up to it, especially comparing it to the other Knockouts match on the show.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it wasn't a bad match by any means. But, you know, if you were to try to find the word for it, I guess that you'd say that this was a fairly formulaic Knockouts match. We've seen this match before. When it's sandwiched between Tommy Dreamer and Eddie Edwards and LAX and the OGs, I don't remember if it was exactly sandwiched between those two matches, but when you put that match between the Dreamer Edwards match and then Pentagon and Sami Callihan, it just doesn't kind of live up. It doesn't that match didn't give you the moments that some of the other matches on the show gave you.
That's another interesting thing you bring up, and I want to ask you about the match order and how things flowed. I thought they did a really nice job of building this show and putting the matches in order, and I thought the lineup was solid, how they built the show and what match order they went with. Was there anything that would have changed as far as changing the match order around at all?
No, I don't think so. No, I agree with you. I mean, the only thing that I thought going into the main event, coming out of the Callahan-Pentagon match was, oh, man, like Moose and Aries, I think, are going to have a good match, but they're not going to be able to live up to the match we just saw. But that being said, you weren't going to put Callahan and Pentagon on last. You put the world title match on last. So I don't have an issue with it whatsoever. The world title match goes on last. That's how it goes. But I thought that Moose and Aries, as I expected them to have a good match. I expected them, though, to not be able to live up to the match that came right before them. And I think that came to fruition. And again, like you said, with the Knockouts title match, Aries and Moose wasn't a bad match. It was just, it wasn't going to give you the type of moments that Callahan and Pentagon gave you, you know, the match just previous to it on the card.
Yeah. We're going to take our final break right now. If you want to call, this is your last chance to get into the phone bank, 515-605-3345. Otherwise, Mike and I will be back to run down the last three matches on the Slammiversary show. Don't go away. Wrestling Night in America continues after this.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
In addition to everything Wade mentioned that is available on pwtorch.com, I also have several Parks' takes, shorter pieces of writing than my page-long column that appears in the Torch newsletter every week. I've done the Parks' on pwtorch.com for the last few weeks. This past week, I had a take on the Slammiversary card and just kind of my impressions on each match heading into the pay-per-view. Tomorrow, I'll have another Parks' take up yet. The Rock's second match ever that was just posted as a hidden gem on WWE Network against Skip of the Donnas, and I kind of broke down that match. So look for that tomorrow afternoon on pwtorch.com. And, of course, you can follow me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. I've been either staying up late or up early, depending on your point of view, and live tweeting Japan G1 over the last few days. This morning was my last opportunity to do that because I go back to school in a few more weeks, so I've got to get my sleep pattern back on schedule, and I can't be staying up till 3:30 in the morning and reviewing shows live anymore. So I will still tweet about them at Greg Parks as I watch them. And, you know, be sure to follow me there. I tweet during Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-views, and everything like that. So give it a follow. And Mike is on Twitter at Mike McMahon, DW, so give him a follow as well. We get into the meat of the Slammiversary card now, Mike, with match number 6, the OGs, with Kingston against the LAX with Konnan, D150 Street, for the Tag Team Championship. And this was the meat of the hardcore sandwich tonight at Slammiversary. LAX retaining the titles in about 13 minutes. The OGs, after the match, attacked and spray-painted OGs on the tag team titles. What differentiated this match in your mind from the other two really hardcore matches on this show?
I thought it was the athletic ability. Santana in particular is able to do some pretty special things athletically, and I think that stood out to me more. It's definitely more than Dreamer and Eddie Edwards. I think Eddie Edwards could certainly do the same type of thing if in there with someone that could do that type of style with him. Dreamer is a little more slow, obviously, at this age, and he's a little beat up, so that match was a little slower. The pace of this match was the fastest, I think, of the three, and a lot of that is because Ortiz and Santana are faster paced wrestlers and they can do that athletic stuff. But yeah, I thought that this stood out to me as being more of an aerial type athletic wrestling match that just happened to have some weapons in the ring and some tables in the ring, as opposed to a match that was needed to really rely on those things. It felt like it was more of a backdrop here. It felt like the weapons were more of a backdrop to the fight itself, as opposed to the weapons being the story of the fight, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and one of the concerns that I had with these hardcore matches, especially in this one, I believe it was this one, with the cookie sheets and the lids of the trash cans, the shots to the head. You had three matches where guys were bleeding, and look, I'm not one of those people who thinks that Hell in a Cell and Elimination Chamber matches should have blood. I'm over that. I feel like we've progressed beyond that need for that. So that's going to take some time to get used to that sort of thing and seeing that again with the frequency we saw it tonight, if that's going to be a thing in Impact Wrestling. The shots to the head is just it's unnecessary and it shouldn't be happening. That I won't say it took me out of the moment, but it was just something you kind of shake your head at this point that people are still doing this kind of stuff. And I know we talk about Impact trying to separate themselves from WWE, trying to separate themselves from really their other competition out there as far as independent wrestling. I thought there were better ways they could have gone about it in certain ways tonight. And that's not to diminish the effort. That's not to diminish the show as a whole, because I thought it was really good and matches were 4-star-plus matches, but that doesn't mean you kind of wave away some of this stuff that has been talked about for years in wrestling and in trying to get rid of.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There was a spot, we already talked about this match, but there was a spot in the, I think it was in the Dreamer Eddie Edwards match, where Edwards is bleeding and wipes a bunch of blood off of his face and smears it on Tommy Dreamer's face, which just was like, I didn't need to see that. You know, that I'm sure that there's nothing, I'm sure that they know that they're both healthy individuals, and that's why they did the spot as it came across. But still, that's something that has the potential to be really dangerous. You know, you're smearing your blood on someone, on another human being. I mean, it's I thought distasteful. It just was kind of gross, but also had the potential to be, you know, potentially dangerous. Stuff like that is going to take some getting used to if they stick with styles like this. I don't like the stuff to the head either. I think with what we know, in today's day and age, what we know about head injuries and long-term effects of head injuries, there's ways that you can have these types of matches without putting yourself, I mean, you're putting yourself in danger when you have these types of matches, but there's ways you can avoid potentially long-term damage in matches like this by just, like that, the tag match you're talking about here, LAX and the OGs, that's where they had the baking sheets to the head. You could have pulled that out of the match and it wouldn't have changed the quality of the match at all. You know, that was, it happened two or three times in the middle of the match. If you just did, if they took that spot and threw it away, I don't think the match is any worse. So you could have avoided it and still had one of the best matches in the show.
Did you get a sense this feud continues?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't remember. Do they steal the belt? I mean, I know they spray painted them. Do they leave them with LAX or do they actually take them?
I think they left them. I don't think they took them.
Okay. But yeah, either way, I think that this continues. If it wasn't going to continue, I think LAX would have won the match and then Homicide and Hernandez and Eddie Kingston just would have left. I think the angle after the match was there for them to get their heat back a little bit. And that they'll probably continue in some way, shape, or form.
Match number 7, Sami Callihan against Pentagon Jr. This result was all but academic, I think. Pentagon Jr. getting the victory and Sami Callihan getting his head shaved after the match. Spectacular violence, which is something that we've talked about already on this show. Sami Callihan continues to be one of, if not the MVP, I think, of Impact Wrestling over the last several months with his work in the Eddie Edwards feud and then now with Pentagon Jr. and Pentagon adding an element to Impact Wrestling, that rebel, that rogue element that we talk about a lot that's missing from WWE. He adds that here to Impact Wrestling, even as a babyface, which he's been. Was this the match of the show for you?
Yeah, I thought this was the match of the night by far. Even just the crowd reaction wise, I mean, the crowd was on fire for most of the show. I don't think the crowd was more alive at any point than this match. They were with them from the second of the opening bell all the way through. They had the spot in the middle where Callihan throws the powder in Pentagon's eyes and he breaks the referee's arm by accident because he thinks that it's Aries. I mean, they did a lot of stuff here and just had the crowd with them the entire time. So yeah, I thought this was the match of the night for me.
And that's not always easy when you go along like this. It's not always, especially this late in the show, it's not always easy to keep the crowd with you, but I think Pentagon and Sami Callihan more than anything else are two really engaging personalities. You buy Sami Callihan as this trashy heel, I guess is what I would say. And my God, the snot and the drool. I don't know how he produces it. I don't want to know how he produces it, but it's disgusting. But it works. I mean, that's who he is. Pentagon is so effective as this babyface character, even though he's breaking arms of everybody and broke Johnny Bravo's arm here in this. And I thought this is just a fantastic match. You had the railroad spikes, which was really butting up against a line of believability, I think, at some point, but I don't think it necessarily crossed it for this. But yeah, this was fantastic, and yeah, I don't know really what else to say. It was a crazy match. I mean, Pentagon has already gotten a title shot. Is Sami Callihan a guy who you can see months, weeks from now being a Impact Wrestling title contender, whether that's against Austin Aries or someone else?
I think they will. He almost strikes me right now, though, as a guy that you don't want to put the title on or even have him in that picture, because anything with Callihan right now feels like a big fight. It feels like a big match. And I don't think that he needs the title. You know, I just feel like he's kind of big enough on his own right now. So I think he's performed so well this year since he's joined the company. It's going to be hard for them to not put him in the title picture at some point. But I think they're going to try to and should try to keep him away from it as much as they can, because this match, you know, 3 weeks ago, I remember saying to Andrew on our Thursday livecast, I said, yeah, I don't understand why this is a thing. He was just in a long feud with Eddie Edwards, and it ended, and now out of nowhere, he's trying to steal Pentagon's mask for no reason whatsoever. And here we are a month later, and it was my favorite match of the show. So anything that Callihan does lately turns to gold, and people are into what he's doing. So if you can... if he's going to be in a position where no matter what he does, it feels like a big match, well, then you can use the world title to make another match feel like a big match. So I think they should try to keep the title away from him as long as they can, just because he's on such a roll.
And it's kind of crazy, because I agree with you that I wish this feud had a lot more time and a lot more time to really develop. And then you get to this show and you watch this match and it's like, man, it feels like they've been feuding for 4 or 5 months. The way the crowd acting, the way the heat in the match is, the way that both guys are reacting, and then you look back and say, maybe it didn't need all that lead time. Maybe it didn't need all the stuff that we've been begging to have. It was just as effective the way the story was told. So, you know, it's one you look back on and say, well, maybe they got this one right over us. And sometimes you just gotta, as Pedro Martinez, you gotta tip your cap. Call him your daddy, because what they did ended up working, and you know I submit to that. So, Ospreys and Moose Impact World Title in the main event. Mike, you're gonna have to carry me on this one more than you usually carry me on these shows, because as I said, I didn't really see much of the match. One thing that I did notice is they went off the air, I think, at about 10:55, 10:56 Eastern time, and it looked like they were really up against it. I don't know if the referee after the match clearly spoke to both guys separately as they were down on the mat. And I'm wondering if he was giving them the time cue of how much time they had left and how they needed to get moving, because I felt like they were out of there. You know, they had Curtis Granderson come in and present Aries with the title. And then that was about it. I mean, Aries hit the road real quick after that. I wish there was more time to show replays. I wish there was time, because this has been a match that has been the focus of TV and the title picture for quite a while now. And it just left me wanting a little more at the end. And I don't know why they exited early when it seemed like they had a few more minutes of satellite time left.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. You know, the match at the beginning, I'll be honest with you, I didn't think you missed much. If you only saw the last 4 or 5 minutes of the match, you saw most of it. Did you see the spot? The one thing that did stick out is, and obviously these guys are planted in the audience, but did you see the spot where Moose threw Aries into the crowd itself?
I did see that,
okay.
Yeah.
So that was neat. I thought that was interesting. You don't see that very often. And obviously, he's not throwing people onto paying customers. In fact, I think I made the note on Twitter. I said, hey, those guys sitting in the front row looked an awful lot like the same security people that broke up that were holding OVE down as Sami Callihan was getting his head shaved. But you know, that was just, you know, you don't, I can't remember seeing anything like that recently where someone gets thrown actually into the crowd. So I thought that was kind of neat. But yeah, it did seem like it was rushed. I mean, especially where Aries gets the win and then almost immediately just bailed out of the ring and was up the top of the ramp. Almost like they knew, okay, hey, the last shot of the pay-per-view was supposed to be Aries on the ramp holding the title, and Aries knew, okay, I've got the win, match is over, I need the belt, I need to hurry up and get to the top of the ramp so that we can get that last shot to close the show. I don't know if something went long, if multiple matches went a little bit long and they were just running out of time, but yeah, it did seem like they were trying to get out of there real quickly at the end.
I had the pleasure of catching the video package to hype this match before the show started, pay-per-view channel, and I noticed more so there than in watching the TV lead to this that Moose really came across as the American Lex Luger of Impact Wrestling. Like, if Impact had more money, I would have thought they would want him a bus to drive around the country with and glad and all the people that he meets in all these small towns. I mean, that's kind of how they portrayed him. Where Austin Aries is this heap on his high horse. Moose is sort of the everyman who parlayed his football talent into being a football star, but now is a professional wrestler, that sort of thing. I kind of chuckle at that comparison because at the end, just like Lex Luger did at SummerSlam year against Yokozuna, he won by countout, but he didn't win the title. And so he came up short, just like Moose came up short in his attempt to win the Impact Wrestling title here. In a lot of these title matches, I've asked you where you think that the champ goes next from here. I want to ask you where you think Moose goes from here. Did he build up enough goodwill with the fan base? Did he build up enough credibility, you think, to where even though he didn't win tonight, he came out of this feud in a better position than when he went in?
Yeah, this is a weird one. I think I said it at the top of the show. It's a weird one because I don't think that Moose never struck me as a guy that you could put the title on and have him be a long-term champion or face of your company. But at the same time, I'm really surprised he didn't win tonight. It just seemed like everything they were building towards was they were building towards Moose winning the title.
Yeah, I
agree. You know, to me, I thought the last shot of this show is Curtis Granderson raising Moose's hand with as the new Impact World Champion. That's what they were building towards. That's what it felt like anyway. So to see Aries win the match, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it was a last-minute thing or if the decision was made today or what. It didn't seem like this is what they were building towards. It just everything felt like they were building towards Moose winning the world title. So who knows? I don't know where either of them go from here. I mean, I also wouldn't necessarily put it past Impact to put the title on Moose this week during their television tapings. You know, I think it sets a bad precedent when you're trying to get people to buy your pay-per-views if you were to do it that way. But their rationale could be that, and we don't know their buy rates, but let's say, I know they've never been huge, so they could look at it and say, okay, we've got, you know, 15 or 20,000 people that are buying our pay-per-view, and we've got 300,000 people that are watching our television show. So if we're trying to crown Moose as our next champion, when do you want to do it? We want to do it when we're in front of 300,000 people and not, you know, 10,000 people. So I don't think that's a good idea. I think that's a bad precedent, especially when you're trying to get people to buy your pay-per-views. But it could be something as that. We've seen that happen before. I mean, Pentagon won the world title at Redemption in April, and within the context of their television, held it for quite a while because of I think they taped 6 or 8 weeks of TV after Redemption was over. But in reality, he won the world title on a Sunday against Austin Aries, and then like Wednesday dropped it back to Aries or whatever it was, or Tuesday. It aired several weeks later, but he was only the champion from a calendar standpoint for a couple of days. So I could see them doing something like that. I mean, to me, the Redemption one, I remember saying it at the time, it felt like Pentagon was a replacement in the match. Pentagon and Phoenix were both replacements in that match because Del Rio or El Patron was fired. So it kind of felt like they were doing it because no one expected Pentagon or Phoenix to win. Everyone thought that was they were in for one match and one match only. So everybody expected Aries to retain. Then Pentagon wins the title just to give you the big surprise. This the same thing. It kind of felt like everyone expected Moose to win. Aries retains, and it's a shock. It's a little bit of a surprise. But that doesn't mean they can't still put the title on Moose one day this week if they really want to.
Last question before we wrap up here, Mike. At the beginning of the show, I talked Impact from a big picture point of view. Then we kind of got into the nuts and bolts of the pay-per-view. I want to wrap things up with another big picture question for you. Impact coming out of this show has perhaps the most momentum they've had since the Broken Hardy experience, maybe even more than that, because there were people who they were split on the Hardy thing. A lot of people liked it. A lot of people didn't. This show has been more universally praised than the Hardys deal. How can Impact capitalize on the momentum they now have after this pay-per-view? Because that's going to be the big question. It's great to put on a great pay-per-view. It's great people talking. How do they capitalize on that going forward and keep that momentum going?
Well, it's kind of funny. I think it's the point that you made earlier in the show. I think they're going to look at this and say, okay, this show is being universally praised, and that the immediate reaction that I'm seeing on Twitter, and I've been reading my feed all night as we've been on the air, it's been praised. People love the show. Everyone's saying it was a great show. I think they're going to look at it and say, okay, well, what did we do here that we haven't done on other shows in the past, and why are people praising the show? And I think people are going to praise Callahan and Pentagon. I think people are going to praise the tag team match, and I think that they're going to look at that and say, okay, that's what we need to be. We need to be a more physical and more violent, for lack of a better term, promotion. And I think that that's what they could end up doing. I don't know how much leeway Pop is going to give them in that regard. I don't know how much they're willing to let them push the envelope. Andrew and I have talked about this. I mean, they've got a show, the Big Brother show that airs on CBS. They air a version of that, I think at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night on Pop. And it's nothing more than a live camera feed of the Big Brother house and the people that are in there. And they're literally, I'm not even joking, literally using the F word on the Pop TV network. At, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock at night on a Tuesday, you know, in the middle of the week. So it strikes me as maybe Pop wouldn't necessarily be opposed to them pushing the envelope and being a little more violent. But my gut says that if this show is praised the way that it's been praised in the immediate hour and a half since the show's ended, it's going to be hard for Impact management not to look at, okay, what did we do here? What is being praised? What type of matches were people really enjoying? I think they're going to look at that and potentially steer the company more in that direction.
You can check out Mike McMahon's Impact Wrestling TV reports every Thursday night on PeterTorch.com. And, of course, he and Andrew Socek host the Post-Impact livecast on PWTorchLivecast.com every Thursday night after Impact Wrestling. Mike, good to have you along with me tonight to break down this Slammiversary pay-per-view.
Yes, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Absolutely. So many come with a VIP membership to PWTorch.com, and here are the details on them. Don't forget, Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, Wrestling Night in America, I'll have Joel Donnell on with me, talking Lucha Underground, as well as the big happenings on Raw, SmackDown, and a lot of the other shows. Don't miss it. I'm Greg Parks, and thanks for joining me tonight for Wrestling Night in America.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free addition to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including the review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan 4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan 4L's Pro Wrest Paradise. with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Live!